Morning to each of you. Nice to have some visitors. So I guess we're going to go back into our study of Romans. So we'll be starting in Romans chapter 2. And realize that Paul sort of belabors the point of not judging other people in my mind, but we'll go over it and see what we can benefit from. Let's bow for a word of prayer. Dear Father, thank you for this time that we can spend together in your word, this time that we can spend together worshiping you. God, you really are worthy of our lives and everything that we, are all. God, I pray that you would be glorified by our worship here this morning, by our lives. Help us, God, as we interact with others to treat them as we would like to be treated, to treat them with the love that you poured into us. God, I pray that we would know how to band together as a church and be the support that we need for each other as well. God, watch over my lips. Help me not to bring shame to your name or to your word here this morning. God, that we could learn together what you desire from us. In Jesus' name, amen. So for starters, I'll back up a couple verses, maybe start in verse 8 of chapter 2. We'll go to 7. To them who by patience, continuance, and well-doing seek for glory and honor and immortality, eternal life. But unto them that are contentious and do not obey the truth, but obey unrighteousness, indignation and wrath, tribulation and anguish upon every soul of man that doeth evil, of the Jew first and also of the Gentile. But glory, honor, and peace to every man that worketh good, to the Jew first and also to the Gentile. So that's where we stopped last time, and talking about how God's not partial and he doesn't discriminate. And I just love the conclusion that God puts us all in. He doesn't show favorites. He doesn't even prefer those that know the rules. He delights in the heart that is oriented correctly. So maybe we'll go through the rest of the chapter, starting verse 12. For as many as have sinned without the law shall also perish without the law, and as many as have sinned in the law shall be judged by the law. For not the hearers of the law are just before God, but the doers of the law shall be justified. For when the Gentiles, which have not the law, do by nature the things contained in the law, these having not the law are a law unto themselves, which show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience, also bearing witness, and their thoughts, the meanwhile accusing or else excusing one another, in the day when God shall judge the secrets of men by Jesus Christ according to my gospel. Behold, thou art called a Jew, and rests in the law, and makest thy boast of God, and knowest his will, and approvest the things that are more excellent, being instructed out of the law, and art confident that thou thyself art a guide of the blind, a light of them which are in darkness, an instructor of the foolish, a teacher of babes, which hast the form of knowledge and of the truth in the law. Thou therefore which teachest another, teachest thou not thyself? Thou that preachest a man should not steal, dost thou steal? Thou that sayest, a man should not commit adultery, dost thou commit adultery? Thou that abhorrest idols, dost thou commit sacrilege? Thou that makest thy boast of the law, through breaking the law, dishonorest thou God? For the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles, through you, as it is written. For circumcision verily profiteth, if thou keep the law. But if thou be a breaker of the law, thy circumcision is made uncircumcision. Therefore, if the uncircumcision keep the righteousness of the law, Shall not his uncircumcision be counted for circumcision? And shall not uncircumcision, which is by nature, if it fulfill the law, judge thee, who by the letter and circumcision dost transgress the law? For he is not a Jew which is one outwardly, neither is that circumcision which is outward in the flesh. But he is a Jew which is one inwardly, and circumcision is that of the heart, in the spirit, and not in the letter, whose praise is not of men, but of God. So, I think he's poking a lot of holes in the argument of being justified by being a Jew and being following the law. And I feel like we have pretty good grasp that that's not who we're trying to be, who we are. And yet, I think in our own way, we can sort of slip into that mentality of trying to be good enough and really looking down on others that live in sin or do wrong as being somehow in a different category than us. And I think, yeah, as we go through this, I want to sort of bring that out, that we're all in the same boat. We all need God in our lives, and we all need a continual work in us to keep us in good standing. So verse 12, if you do wrong without knowing the rules, you will die without reference to the rules. But if you do wrong to the rules you are under, you will be judged by those rules. And I think, yeah, it's hard to know. I mean, I think chapter 3 talks about there being advantage in being the Jew and being in having the law, but just the beauty that God works with right where we're at. He doesn't expect us to do things that we don't know, but he lets us be judged based on what we know. Verse 13. So this 13 through 15 are all in parentheses, at least in the King James Version. When I get back to 16, I'll probably read 12 and 16 together. But 13, it's not about what you know, but rather about your character, what is actually lived out. I was thinking about that. Is character what you do or character who you are? And realized, well, who you are comes out. So I felt like character was appropriate there. Verse 14, when people do the good things without knowing what they're required to, they become a law to themselves in what is good. And I thought, what would life be like if we were actually prescribed to do everything that we do on a daily basis? Like, if you take what you did this week, and you imagine that you were required to do every single thing that you did. How would life be like? What do you think that life would be like? I guess here's some of the descriptions that came to my mind. Robotic, overwhelming, busy, scary. Anyway, I just realized God's given us a lot of freedom to make choices in our life, and He delights in seeing us choosing after Him in little choices and seeing Him in much of life. I feel like that's where a lot of the Jews went off track, as they thought, okay, as long as I do what I'm required, then I can do whatever I want from there on out. And totally missing the heart that God wants a heart oriented after God. This phenomena shows that the outworking of God's ways are written on all mankind's heart. Even their conscience is a witness, and their thoughts. These two either excuse or accuse the actions of others. I find it interesting that they accuse or excuse others, not ourselves. It is very easy to misjudge ourselves, both too harshly and too leniently. The perfection of God is only present in the person of Jesus. That makes Him the perfect judge for all mankind, both to condemn or accuse us, or to justify or excuse us. We do have good pieces of God's law in us, that say what is right for others. But God is the only one who really knows, and he has withheld judgment until the last day. Thinking about how God's patience makes so that we don't... I mean, sometimes immediate judgment comes for the actions that we do, but God has pushed out giving his ultimate judgment for the complete person until the end of time. So then, going back to verse 16, maybe I'll read 12 and 16 together. For as many as have sinned without the law shall also perish without the law, and as many as have sinned in the law shall be judged by the law, in the day when God shall judge the secrets of men by Jesus Christ according to my gospel. The day is coming when God will judge what is hidden about all men, everywhere. The good news is that this will be done by Jesus. He will be the pattern to go off of, and the reason for righteousness on anyone's account. As we keep going through here, just the brokenness of us all is highlighted to me over and over again. It's good not to judge, but it really should be authentic. I was thinking about how I often hear people say, when somebody dies, say, so-and-so passed away, and then the question is asked, well, did they know the Lord, or were they a Christian? And it's very easy, I probably said it myself, to be like, well, I'm not the judge, or I'm not going to judge that. But I guess what I find interesting is that the hidden message in those statements, they just sound so Pharisaical to me. Because they always mean that what we actually judge them as is that they weren't doing well. How do we know that? Because we never say those things about someone that we judge as doing well. We show certainty in our judgment of good people, but try to hide our certainty if our judgment was that they were bad. And I was thinking about, what is this motivated by, our withholding of bad judgment? I think it could be motivated by fear, or trying not to get condemned ourselves. I think there's the harsh statement, judge not that ye be not judged. And I realize we tend to apply that only in the bad sense, not in our good judgment of people. So verse 17. Behold, thou art called a Jew and rests in the law and makest thy boast in God. I feel like we can easily replace this word Jew with whatever title we want to give ourselves, because he's really pushing back at the thought of us being better than other people. And so any self-identifying labels that stick to us, Christian, Protestant, Anabaptist, American, Mainer, conservative, man or woman, any other label. This passage is for us, for you, whoever you are. And he says, you think you're great and all close to God. You know what he wants and recognize and appreciate the best things. You're enlightened and on his side. Verse 19, you're sure that you are helping those who cannot help themselves, giving light to those who are groping in darkness. And I feel like, yeah, it's so easy for us to approach conversations and relationships that way. Like, we're pretty sure we got it figured out, and it'd be nice if the other person would just learn. So verse 20, we're enlightening stupid people. I was surprised that stupid was one of those words that was another translation of foolish. Anyway, helping people grow up. You do have a type or a shape of truth and knowledge by possessing the law or the Bible or whatever you've learned from. So when it says the law here, I think it's talking about the Mosaic law, but that word law could be anything established or considered normal or anything prescribed by reason. So I guess that in my sense, I would say common sense. Like, if we think that we're teaching somebody common sense, verse 21, Well, let's go back to the shape. Looked up that word, a form of godliness. Form. Where does it say it? Which has the form of knowledge and of the truth in the law. And that's been, it's only translated, that Greek word is only translated twice, and the other one is having a form of godliness but denying the power thereof. And it appears like it could be authentic, but most likely is not authentic. It just looks like it. The Greek word is morphosis. So if you think of a metamorphosis, when the caterpillar changes its shape into something else, it looks like you have truth and knowledge. And I think about how do we use the Bible as a club to hang over people's heads, or do we think of it as a revelation of God to us? I think if we try to, I think we can sort of use it in a abrasive way that doesn't really speak to the truth that of the reason why God gave us the law. Verse 21, since you're so good at telling others what to do, can't you tell yourself? You know how to preach against stealing, but do you steal? You say, don't be morally perverted, but are you? You shudder at the thought of idols, but do you rob from temples where people worship them? I was sort of surprised. When I was looking into this commit sacrilege, I thought, for sure, I knew what it meant. But looking at different translations and the Greek words themselves, it means rob temples. And I was sort of surprised at what's the connotation there, but I thought, maybe it's like, are you profiting off of other people's worship of idols? The connotation here seems like, in all of these questions, they seem like rhetorical questions. And it's, be sure your sin will find you out. You do all these. If you think you don't, you're probably not thinking rightly about your life. As much as we would like to have it all together, we don't. We all fail. And if we think that we don't fail, our definition of failure is much lower than God's. Verse 23, you think you're great because of the truth that you possess, but are you faithful to what you know? Or do you insult that truth and God by your actions? And I think all of us have a standard higher for ourselves than we're able to live up to. We know that God's standard is higher than we can live up to. And so, when we fail, think of what it does to God's name. He talks about it being dishonoring to God. Verse 24, people around the world have a bad view of God because of the things that you do. Just like God recorded condemnation of the Jewish nation, we don't measure up either. It may not be fair to judge God by us like that, but it doesn't keep the world from doing it, or us from doing it to each other. Realize that a disciple is not a good picture of who their leader is, and yet, how often do we hear the statement, oh, I don't go to church because they're a bunch of hypocrites, or something of that nature, because the bad things that the priests have done in the past, or I realize that's a really bad, really bad way of judging what things are. And yet we do it all the time, and the world will do it. The world will judge our God by us. Verse 25, to have the sign that you live for God, and I realize this circumcision and uncircumcision could be taken different ways, I'm taking it, the circumcision is basically the outward sign that you're trying to follow the law, or that you're a Jew, and sort of changing that into our lives, because we're not trying to be a Jew, but we're trying to live for God. To have the sign that you live for God or are His is great if you do and are His. But if you fail, your sign is worthless. In the same way, if someone lives for God as God desires, won't God count them as if they were His chosen people? And if they, by impulse, in their ignorance, live the life that God desires, they prove your evilness. When you try to live your own way while doing all the right outward things, I think that's what I see the Jews doing. And I guess I talked about that at the beginning. Meeting the standard and then living out our own lives. Is that what we're after, or is it a desire to know God's desire and live it? Being God's person is not about looking right or doing right on the outside. It's not about being in the right huddle or having the right mascot or the right image. God's person is the one who has given himself to God inwardly, letting God reign or be the boss in his desires and in his energy. Just trying to figure out how to come up with a different way of explaining in the Spirit. But I think sort of what enlivens us, Spirit being sort of breath. It's not who people say is great that is great, but who God says. They are all great. Oh, they are the great ones, the ones that God say. So then I have a few more verses. We will try to go through verse 8 of chapter 3. What advantage then hath the Jew? Or what profit is there of circumcision? Much every way, chiefly because that unto them were committed the oracles of God. For what if some did not believe? Shall their unbelief make the faith of God without effect? God forbid. Yea, let God be true, but every man a liar. As it is written, that thou mightest be justified in thy sayings, and mightest overcome when thou art judged. But if our unrighteousness commend the righteousness of God, what shall we say? Is God unrighteous, who taketh vengeance? I speak as a man. God forbid. For then, how shall God judge the world? For if the truth of God hath more abounded through my lie unto his glory, why yet am I also judged as a sinner? And not rather, as we be slanderously reported, and as some affirm that we say, let us do evil that good may come, whose damnation is just. Maybe we'll go through verse 10. What then? Are we better than they? No, in no wise. For we have before proved, both Jews and Gentiles, that they are all under sin. As it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. So I think it's really easy if you feel like, well, we're all bad, and it doesn't help to, like, if you know the law, then you have to keep the law. If you don't know the law, then you can be good without keeping all of the law. It feels like, well, why do you even teach what's right? And I think that's a good question. What benefit is it then to be taught all these things about God's ways, or to be a recognized part of God's people? Very much in every way. The most important is that the Bible, or God's communication to man, was committed to these people. And I think, yeah, to think about society and how many people are doing their own thing. They have their own relationship with God. It's like, well, why try to get together with the people and work out church? But how is the gospel going to be propagated if we're just keeping everything to ourselves? So if some people claim to be God's people but are fakes and haven't actually believed in God for who he really is, do they make belief in God useless? I think that's the big question, is there's Jews that aren't Jews inwardly. Do they make being a Jew not worthwhile? No way. Let God be believed and every person found a liar or lacking full wisdom. Believing God is the way for what you believe and say to be found true. God, and those that agree with him, will be found to have been true. But what about when we do wrong, and through the wrong we help show how right God is? Is God imperfect because he punishes us for these things? No way. Otherwise, God couldn't judge the world or bring things back to right. And think about how God judges us in the immediate consequence for our poor choices. It's like, well, that's the way that God brings things into balance, brings things back to right. And as we look forward to the end of time when God makes this wrong world right or creates a new world, not sure how all those things will be worked out, but things will be put back to right. I think we see that on a daily basis, and we look forward to that on a broader scale. There is great cause for rejoicing that our actions produce results or punishments. Otherwise, meaning in life would be reduced to insanity if our actions didn't cause anything. There would be no reason to choose anything. If more people know God's truth because I lied to make him look good, why do I still get punished like I did something wrong? I don't know. I'm not sure what he's alluding to here, but it seems like he's talking about saying some kind of lie and somehow God gets more glory from it. And I think, well, we've all heard the end justifies the means, but I don't think that's true. Instead, some people could say, let's do more and more bad things so that things get better and better. But that's really faulty reasoning. The end doesn't justify the means. People who do that deserve to be cut off. So what? Are we better than those people? Not in any way. We've already went over this, and we know that everyone, no matter what, their pedigree is a sinner. It's even written down in the past. There's nobody that has perfect standing. Nobody. And I think that's just, yeah, as we tie it back into Romans 1 and talking about the perversion that people get into as they walk away from God, I feel like this is a really good conclusion of that we're all there. We all need help. And yeah, I think of what Jim Littlefield says, that people are like the world around. And yeah, so may God give us wisdom in not knowing how to not judge others and how to share the gospel with them. So God bless you all.